Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now, the Iran nuclear deal translation wars. As President Obama and the Iranian negotiators try to sell the nuclear deal in each country, one emerging political issue is that the document could be read differently in English and in Farsi. For example, on Thursday, the Iranian Supreme Leader, Ali Khamenei, said no nuclear deal would be reached unless the U.S. lifted all sanctions immediately after a deal was struck, a final version of a deal, in June. He also said no inspection of military sites. Now, this goes directly against what was written in the U.S. release document or fact sheet, which said nuclear-related sanctions will be suspended after the IAEA has verified that Iran has taken all of its key nuclear-related steps. No sanctions until verification. So maybe the Iranian language version says they're promising us less than we think they are and that we agreed to more. Senator John McCain, not a Farsi speaker as far as I know, says Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei is reading it right. Secretary of State John Kerry is reading it wrong.
John Kerry must have known what was in it and yet chose to interpret it in another way. It's probably in black and white that the Ayatollah is probably right. John Kerry is delusional.
Now, that prompted a sharp rebuke over the weekend from none other than President Obama himself.
And when I hear some, like Senator McCain recently, suggest that our Secretary of State, John Kerry, who served in the United States Senate, a Vietnam veteran, who's provided exemplary service to this nation, is somehow less trustworthy in the interpretation of what's in a political agreement than the Supreme Leader of Iran, that's an indication of the degree to which partisanship has crossed all boundaries.
Whoa. And on CBS Face the Nation yesterday, Kerry addressed the substance. Here's 40 seconds of that.
Everything I have laid out is a fact, and I'll stand by them. In the end, it's really the final agreement that will determine it. And I would remind you, we had this same dueling narratives, discrepancy, spin, whatever you want to call it, with respect to the interim agreement, Bob. But in the end, the interim agreement came out exactly as we had described. And what's important is Iran not only signed it, but has lived up to it in every respect. Iran has proven that it will join into an agreement and then live by the agreement. And so that's important as we come into the final 2.5 months of negotiation.
Kerry on Face the Nation. And joining us now is Rob Litvak, Vice President of Scholars at the Wilson Center and former Director of Nonproliferation in the National Security Council under President Clinton. Hi, Rob Litvak. Welcome to WNYC. Thank you very much for coming on today.
Good morning.
Let's begin with that back and forth over the sanctions. What's Khamenei saying, and where does this incongruity come from?
You know, I'd look at this in the context of the kind of diplomatic positioning that takes place between translating a new interim agreement, the one that was concluded, translating that into a comprehensive agreement. I think Secretary Kerry alluded to in his remarks that weren't in your tape that the Russian Foreign Ministry had come out and basically sustained the American interpretation of the parameters agreement. The negotiations in Lausanne were drawn out precisely because it wasn't so much. It really gave proof to Einstein's observation that politics is more difficult than physics. That it really wasn't about negotiating the number of centrifuges or other limitations on the Iranian program, but rather it was a duel over competing narratives. And one saw that before the agreement was signed, and now one's seeing it as in the continuation.
So, listeners, any Iranian Americans listening right now who speak both languages and happen to have read the document in both languages, that would be pretty interesting to hear if some of you have actually done that. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9673. 9-2 for Rob Litvak, Vice President of Scholars at the
one additional point
Wilson Center. Yeah, go ahead, of course.
By way of context, from the beginning, the nuclear negotiations have been a proxy, a surrogate on both sides for a much broader debate. On the Iranian side, the nuclear negotiations are a proxy for the fundamental debate in Iran about its relationship with the outside world in general and the United States, the great Satan in particular. And for that reason, it's a highly loaded question. Doing an agreement with the great Satan is a politically loaded question in Iran. On the American side, the nuclear negotiations are also a proxy or a surrogate for a broader debate. And that debate has been with us since the end of, since 9/11. It's what should be our policy in dealing with these so-called rogue states? Should our objective be to change their conduct, their behavior, or should it be to change the regime itself? Now, many of the opponents on the American side in Congress and in Israel that oppose this deal do so because they focus on the character of the Iranian regime, that the deal doesn't really address what they view as the core problem with Iran, namely a regime that is a state sponsor of terrorism, that's pursuing regional policies. The defenders of the agreement argue that you're overloading an agreement, that this parameters agreement and a comprehensive agreement that will hopefully derive from it address a here-and-now urgent issue. It should be judged in those terms alone, and that to say, as some of the critics have argued, that this agreement is flawed because it doesn't address these other areas of concern is just to overload the agreement and in so doing really undermine its possibility of coming to fruition.
Right. That sounds like a good take on the big underlying questions for both countries. But here we are with a piece of paper, and the piece of paper seems to say different things in different languages. Let me go over three very specific examples and get your best interpretation of these differences. I read that the American statement says that Iran has agreed to shrink its stockpile of uranium to 300 kilograms, a commitment that the Iranian statement does not mention. Is that true as far as you know?
I think what the American fact sheet, the U.S. fact sheet that was released and endorsed by the other P5 plus one members, such as most notably the Russians, with whom we've had strained relations, that speaks for itself. And the Iranian point there is really an omission, something they don't wish to emphasize, but is part of the parameters agreement.
So this is not the actual agreement, but just we're talking about different fact sheets that were put out general public consumption as opposed to language being different in the agreement itself?
Correct. This is back to the kind of competing narratives point. The United States came out, the negotiations did not yield a consensus document that all of the parties agreed to. Each side came out with their version of kind of what had happened. The U.S. came up with its fact sheet, and it emphasized the points that the United States wished to emphasize, namely limitations on the Iranian program. The Iranian fact sheet, through omission and by points of emphasis, you know, point to those points that they wish to emphasize, namely that Iran has this quote-unquote right to enrich uranium, and is allowed to maintain a civil nuclear energy program. So it's a bit of a kind of a Rashomon where people are coming at it from different perspectives. I think the facts that were in the fact sheet on the American side are the ones that are the basis for negotiation that will have to be fleshed out into a comprehensive agreement.
Another one of the three, the Iranian statement on the agreement emphasizes that nuclear cooperation between Iran and the six world powers that negotiated the agreement will grow, including in the construction of nuclear power plants, research reactors, and the use of isotopes for medical research. That potential cooperation is not mentioned at all in the American fact sheet. Again, you're saying this is just an omission of something that's there because they don't want the American public to overinterpret that into somehow allowing a nuclear weapons program?
I don't think that the American version of the agreement, you know, precludes the possibility of what the Iranians are saying. Essentially, you know, if you think of the put the uranium enrichment program into context for your listeners. What is uranium enrichment? It is the industrial process to increase the percentage of the fissile isotope within uranium, uranium-238, from 1% to 5% for a civil nuclear energy generation. It's that industrial process in which centrifuges spinning are a key kind of element of the production. The notional purpose of this uranium enrichment program in Iran is for nuclear reactors. The only problem is that these nuclear reactors do not yet exist. They aren't even on the drawing board. What the Iranians are alluding to is the possibility that they might be able to buy Russian nuclear power generating reactors and use their own fuel to provide the generating power for it.
And last one, the American statement says that Iran will be barred from using its advanced centrifuges to produce uranium for at least 10 years. Before those 10 years are up, Iran will be able to conduct some, quote, limited research on the centrifuges. The Iranian version omits the word limited. Is that your reading, and is that important?
Final point on that second point on the Russian nuclear reactors. None of those transfers of technology from Russia to Iran will be possible if Iran's non-compliant with the agreement. Okay, so it's sort of pending compliance, they would have access to civil nuclear energy from Russian origin technology. On the third point, on the advanced reactors, on the advanced centrifuges. The agreement calls for the Iranians to be able to spin 1,000 of their first-generation centrifuges. The Iranians made a big point about not closing their second enrichment site, this one, the one that was discovered in 2009, the underground one at Fordo, that they wanted to not dismantle that site, but they wanted to keep it as an active site. And they, the Iranians, agreed that they would spin 1,000 centrifuges there to keep it going as an advanced site. And that was a hard concession for the United States to make, to allow Fordo to exist. But the assurance that the Secretary of Energy Moniz provided was that these centrifuges would be spinning under IAEA supervision inert gases that would not provide enriched uranium at all. So the notion was, if they want to waste 1,000 of their 5,000 quota on this Fordo site, not even spinning uranium, the precursor fuel, the feedstock for enriched uranium, that's 1,000 centrifuges that have really nothing to do with their nuclear program. Yeah. They're spinning inert gases.
212-433-WNYC and Fariba in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. Good morning.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you for putting me on.
And you're an Iranian-American, I gather?
Yes, yes.
And what do you want to say?
Basically, as an Iranian-American, since the 80s, I don't think I'm alone to have been put under the pressure of this kind of psychological war being played on. I was ecstatic when I heard that Iran has not only met all the negotiations demands, they've gone beyond their expectations in diminishing the nuclear, the nuclear enrichment. Being an environmentalist, I'm all against nuclear power energy anyway. And from what I gather between the two narratives, it comes down to basically one term that it kind of summarizes the main clash, which is Iranians want all the sanctions to be suspended and Americans want it lifted temporarily until proven. And basically, I don't know what is the level of involvement that America wants or Iran wants to allow them to have within the country, but basically, they wanted, now that they have come down to this level, they basically want the sanctions suspended.
Right. And Fariba, I'm going to leave it there and ask a question about that to our guest, Rob Litvak from the Wilson Center. This whole thing over the last few days really blew up over Supreme Leader Khamenei saying he will insist that sanctions be lifted immediately upon signing of a final version of the agreement, not, as the current version says, after there's verification that the Iranians are sticking to their end of the deal. I wonder if this is being mischaracterized in the press as a translation issue. And it's really just Khamenei saying, okay, we're going to the final stages of this negotiation now. We're moving from a framework to the actual final language, and this is where I want it to be. So it's like a negotiating point as opposed to a different interpretation.
I think that, you know, that's a very, plausible kind of interpretation of the playout here, that they can say that this comprehensive agreement, as it is implemented, will bring about the lifting of all sanctions, but that lifting will not occur on day one of the signing of the agreement. That's really a deal breaker, you know, on the American side, and I think in the media context, part of the Iranian negotiating the jockeying for kind of advantage as the parameters is translated into comprehensive agreement. But the United States some of its P5 plus one allies, you know, fell off of its maximalist position. The maximalist position of the United States in 2005 period was that there should be zero centrifuges spinning in Iran, and that Iran should not have a full fuel cycle. And that's not only because Iran had been cheating within the non-proliferation treaty with covert sites, but also that the United States then rejected the interpretation of the non-proliferation treaty, Article 4, which allows for the transfer of civil nuclear technology. The U.S. rejected the interpretation that this provision of the NPT was the basis upon which Iran could develop a full fuel cycle, including enriched uranium. The United States, in a sense, lost that battle with our allies, and in world public opinion, Article 4 of the NPT is now interpreted as allowing Iran to have this fuel cycle program with enriched uranium, so that centrifuges that spin to produce low enriched uranium of 5% for nuclear reactors can keep spinning to produce weapons-grade fissile material with 90% enriched uranium. And really, the negotiations about how do we ensure that Iran will be allowed to have a civil nuclear program, but that it's not masquerading for a weapons program. And I think the parameters agreement allows for that. But just as the United States fell off of its maximalist position, zero centrifuges spinning, the maximalist Iranian position, which had a couple of components, that they should not bound their program in any way, also included the demand that all sanctions should be lifted immediately. That is clearly not going to happen. When the agreement is signed, the European Union, the United States, through President Obama, through executive order, he can do certain things. But and this goes to this point goes to the question of congressional involvement. It will involve an act of Congress to lift many of the sanctions currently imposed on Iran. So the debate about a congressional role in all of this, there will be a role of Congress. It's a question now, sort of how, you know, the timing of when that role would be exercised.
So we will see if they get to yes on a final version by the end of June, whether the White House can then get to yes with John McCain or at least enough of his Senate colleagues and congressional colleagues to make it a reality. Rob Litvak, Vice President of Scholars at the Wilson Center, former Director of Nonproliferation in the National Security Council under President Clinton. Thank you very much for clearing some of this up for us.
And I live in Washington, but I'm a former New Yorker, so it's a pleasure to be on a New York City radio station.
I'm glad.
Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.